Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Wall Street markets are set to open in less than 25 minutes. It will be the first market reaction to the president, who spoke to the nation about 22 minutes ago and urged Congress to pass the bailout plan, which failed in the House yesterday, and tried to reassure Americans that, in fact, the cost of inaction is greater than whatever cost there would be in passing the plan. We should note that a widely watched housing index just released in the last few minutes shows that home prices in America have dropped at the fastest annual rate ever in July. That is a record. Joining us now to talk about the political implications of both the president's speech and the idea that Congress is going to wait for several days before anything happens on this bailout plan is Richard Wolff, Newsweek's senior White House correspondent. Richard, you heard the president's speech. I gather he was addressing not only Congress, but the nation at large. What do you think the message was, and how likely is this to reassure the what we appear to see as a 30-70% lopsided lack of support for the bailout plan around people in the United States?
Well, there were two messages here, and neither of them were new. One is to the markets, this process is messy. Legislation will happen, and so be calm. And the message to members of Congress is that the alternatives are worse. You don't like this legislation. Nobody likes having to do it. But the possibility of it not happening, it could well lead to economic disaster, and what we saw in the markets yesterday was just a taste of it. Having said that, because he's made these arguments before and the legislation went down so badly yesterday, it's not clear that it's going to be enough just repeating what the president has said before.
Yeah, Richard, that was my question. I was a bit surprised that he didn't present some other argument for why he believes this particular bailout package is the one that is going to help the U.S. economy and therefore the world economy.
Well, the problem here is that there's no alternative. You can sweeten it in some way. You can add measures that members of Congress can take back to their unhappy voters and say, look, we got a better deal. But the underlying dynamic really doesn't change. The markets need extra money, or at least the promise of extra money, for some reassurance, because this is all about confidence. And the dynamic doesn't change in that we are so close to an election, and that's an impossible time to do what is controversial and complex piece of new legislation. It's election politics that is really driving this, as well as the markets. And faced with a market decline or losing a seat, lawmakers choose to avoid losing a seat.
Although in 2004, the president said something which I suspect has come back to haunt him at this moment, and I'm wondering if it crossed his mind as he was speaking to the nation. After the victory in 2004, the president said he had won an enormous amount of political capital that he intended to spend. 4 years later, it appears that he has none of that capital left, and there's almost no real persuasive power that he has other than a kind of a Hail Mary, which is what, quite frankly, that speech looked like to me.
You know, what's fascinating about President Bush's second term is that 4 months after he promised to everyone that he had political capital, he obviously had none. And the same people who caused his second term to go down almost immediately in terms of what he was able to do are the same people who blocked his plans this week. That's to say, House Republicans, this ideological group of true blue conservatives, or rather true red conservatives, are the ones who are frustrating him now. They stopped him on a whole range of things, especially immigration, but on spending plans. These are the people who felt that they got rolled in the first term on things like a prescription drug benefit for Medicare, on growing government, on the Department of Homeland Security. And they are coming back here and saying, we represent the future of the party, not you. So this is a debate that has been going on for a very long time, and it's been deeply frustrating. Whether or not John McCain could do it as president, whether he could control this group of people, is an open question, given what we've seen over the last few days.
Let's get to McCain in a second, but just to back up to what President Bush faces now, does he go back to the drawing board? Do they come up with a different proposal? Does he sit on the leadership in on Capitol Hill to hammer out whatever remaining obstacles are left? What can he do?
Well, they can add certain things that will just attract just enough votes. Barack Obama is out with a plan which has also bubbled up through Congress to more than double, from $100,000 to $250,000, the amount that's insured by the FDIC in regular deposit accounts. That would give some people some cover. Remember that although I just talked about House Republicans, there was a combined sort of consensus yesterday between conservative Republicans in the House and also liberal Democrats in the House, people who didn't like this plan. So the question is, could you just peel off a dozen or two dozen votes, or do you have to do something that gets you another 100 votes? It's going to be very hard to do that. But as I said, increasing the amount of insurance in these bank accounts may be one way to do that. But the other elements of it, the main thrust of this package, which is to say, giving this broad authority to Treasury Secretary to buy up these so-called troubled assets, these mortgage-backed securities, that's not going to change. There is no other plan.
You know, it's interesting because it seems as though a giant arc is kind of closing in terms of presidential history here, and I wonder if you can follow me on this. So it's not too convoluted, I promise. Maybe it takes more of a Harry Truman to pass a plan like this so close to an election, somebody who comes from Main Street America, rather than George Bush, who got elected on his corporate creds, and Henry Paulson, who's the Secretary of the Treasury because he was once chairman of Goldman Sachs. John McCain is, you know, talking about maybe he doesn't know that much about the economy, but he's a successful manager with military sort of corporate style. That role is discredited in Washington all of a sudden, and there isn't one to replace it yet.
Well, that's a good point, and it could be the president's resume, but it also, I think you could fault his immediate response here. It took him about 10 days for the president to come out and talk in a credible, serious way about this crisis, which was way too long. And when he did talk about it, he didn't really sort of get out the charts, the flip charts and the stick, and say, look, this is how this happened, and this is why we're here, and we all share responsibility. So what's happened is that for a week or two, people have been able to say it's all the fault of the Wall Street folks. Well, obviously they bear a huge degree of the blame here, but in the end there were consumers out there, homeowners, speculators, people who were just taking out credit, and we all were at the party. So, you know, it takes a president who has credibility, who is looking to the future, who can see this crisis unfold, to get out there early and shape perceptions, and that just didn't happen.
Well, it sounds as though you're describing this as a kind of a financial Katrina, in that you've got a member of the government fronting for the administration, and the president is sort of in the shadows. Do you think this is kind of a Katrina too?
There is certainly, in terms of the delayed response, there are parallels. But I'm not sure that this administration was slow to understand what was going on. The problem is that Paulson doesn't come from Washington. He is a Wall Street figure. He doesn't have the political or the communication skills to drive home his message. And when you think that he had to, albeit in jest, drop onto his knees last week in front of Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, and beg her to pass this, it just tells you that there wasn't enough work done with Congress to bring them along here. And again, that's been a feature of this second term, whether it's on Katrina or on Iraq. If you keep going my way or the highway and you adapt late in the process, then at some point the other side, in this case Congress, starts to adopt the same tactics, and that's exactly what they've done.
So you talked about, you know, maybe the tactic here is to try to peel off 12 congressmen to make this work. There's also talk of having the Senate go first. Quickly, before we go, are there any waivers? Can you identify six lawmakers who might be convincible at this point? I don't see any.
In the House, they're looking at members of the Financial Services Committee who may be under pressure from their own contacts in the financial services industry. Remember, this isn't a hypothetical crisis. Banks are collapsing on a daily basis. So someone with some experience in the financial services industry may be vulnerable there for some pressure. They're also looking at some swing states that have also suffered disproportionately from the collapse in housing, places like Florida, Nevada. So they're really focusing on points of pressure there, and they may be able to pick off the votes. If they don't do that, then you're looking at individual bailouts for individual banks and not enough money to go around.
All right, Richard Wolff is Newsweek's senior White House correspondent talking about the reaction, if there is any, and we're going to see it all day today, to the president speaking to the nation about the bailout that failed to pass the House yesterday. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.